Hi, everybody. Today's Monday, June 2nd, 2025. And our friend Larry Johnson is back with us. Welcome back, Larry.
I'm glad you still consider me a friend.
Yeah, dear friend.
All right. You're a good kid. I'll keep you in the will.
Larry, let's get started with what has happened. Ukrainian drone attack. Somehow exaggerated in the media, somehow diminished the picture. Yeah. Your take on what has happened in Ukraine, in Russia.
Are you suggesting that the media misreports things and exaggerates? I'm shocked. I'm glad I was sitting down. I would have passed out. Yeah, this was this is another classic information operation. Now, I don't want to minimize the severity of what it was. It was serious, not so much by the amount of damage that was caused, but by the nature of the targets that were struck. These bombers are part of Russia's, you know, it's called the triad. You've got three legs in the nuclear response. You've got those that are launched from the land, those that are launched from the sea, and those that are launched from the air. So this is the air component. This was a direct attack on Russia's nuclear capability. And, you know, I don't know what the hell they were thinking, because this, let's be clear. Ukraine did not do this on its own. This was not just a Ukrainian plan that they came up with and they put together, or they bought the components, and they placed the people, and they controlled the communications. No. This clearly had the involvement, most likely, of British intelligence, but I cannot rule out that U.S. intelligence was also involved, even though the United States has strongly denied it. But, you know, there's this thing that CIA has always used, and other intelligence organizations, called plausible deniability. That's why you conduct a covert operation so that the president can claim, well, I don't know, we had nothing to do with that. That wasn't done on my orders, but in fact was a part of a intelligence network. So the key thing that strikes me is, how were those drones turned on? You know, first they were actually, put together, assembled with the explosives. Then they were placed in the truck. But that doesn't turn them on. And then once they get turned on, they take off. How do they know where to go? And, you know, some are suggesting, oh, the guidance was just done via the telephone system. I don't believe that for a minute. So this suggests something more sophisticated. And, fortunately, there are a total of 5 to 7 planes damaged and or destroyed, you know, a significant amount less than what the Ukrainians claimed at 40. But Russia has viewed this as an escalation. I think there's a realistic possibility that we'll hear from Putin sometime today, now that the talks have broken down, ended in Istanbul, that Russia will declare war. They'll move this from a special military operation to war, which means mobilization and means no more restraint on a variety of targets. I think it's highly likely that we're going to see Russia use not just one, but multiple numbers of the Arashnik missile against strategic targets inside Ukraine. Ukraine is going to pay a heavy price. This is what took place yesterday, is the classic definition of a Pyrrhic victory. You get a tactical win, but a strategic defeat. And that's what's going to take place for Ukraine.
Larry, 5 bases were attacked, if I'm not mistaken. Is that the case?
Well, actually, You're not mistaken. You were just reading crappy reporting that was mistaken. They were, five bases were targeted, but I think there were only actual hits on three of them. Two of the bases were able to destroy or stop the drones.
In terms of, Larry, I don't know if you saw the article on CNN. It says that Pete Hegseth, in Pentagon chief Pete Hegseth, watched the Ukrainian drone attack live yesterday. If that's the case, is that going to be of concern for the Trump administration? Do you think that the reporting, honestly, on the way that the Trump administration somehow did head of Pentagon was involved in that sort of attack?
I would find it, I won't say it's impossible, but for Pete Hegseth to sit there and, quote, watch it would mean that there would have to be either the Ukrainians, one of the drones that they were using provided video coverage, and the United States was tapped into that. If that's and that's one possibility. Otherwise, you know, the ones I have seen during my time working with the military, the term, they called it kill TV because somebody was usually getting killed with a drone. But you would have another drone up that would be providing, you know, lifetime video feed. If that is true, that Hegseth was watching this real time, that tells you that the United States absolutely knew this was coming about and was a participant in some way.
It's so amazing, Larry, that you see the new round of negotiations today, which lasted more than an hour and 15 minutes. And Russia is so calm. Russia is just, they consider the separation between the different fronts of the conflict in Ukraine. And do you feel if Donald Trump was in a similar position as, in a similar situation as Vladimir Putin is today, what could have been his reaction? An attack on Russia, as you mentioned, it's nuclear bombers. These drones attack a very important part of the military industrial complex and the military, the power of Russia. What would be the reaction on the part of the United States if something similar had happened to them?
Oh, we would view it as an act of war and would respond accordingly. You know, and this is, you know, I had exchanged some messages with our friend Pepe Escobar earlier today. And as, you know, I posed to Pepe the question, you know, thinking, you know, this is going to be a game changer with respect to the war in Ukraine from the Russia standpoint. And Pepe agreed. He's, you know, he said that these talks in Istanbul were DOA, dead on arrival. I think the you know, the combination of the attack on the airfields coupled with the terrorist attacks on the two bridges, one in Bryansk and one in Belgorov.
In Kursk,
was it Kursk or Belgorov? Kursk. Yeah. But that is, you know, that's now pushed Russia that the peace, any quote peace negotiations, they're dead, they're off the table. Ukraine has foregone its last opportunity, and you know Russia's going to crush it militarily. So this, you know, we know that Marco Rubio and Foreign Minister Lavrov spoke yesterday. As I checked late last night, which would have been very early morning Moscow time, there was still no readout from the foreign ministry. My guess is it was not a polite, it was a professional conversation. But I think Lavrov, you know, read the riot act to Rubio. And, you know, sometime, I guess, after that call, Trump put out word to the rest of the EU that Russia's response is going to be, I think the words were, disproportionate. I don't know why the West thinks it's, quote, disproportionate to try, you know, if you launch an attack on my nuclear capability and you think I'm going to only sit back and, you know, throw a paper ball at you, forget about it.
Larry, here is what Zelensky said about the attack, drone attack on Russia.
Top priority is supporting our defense, and I'm grateful for all the support packages and for every investment in weapons production in Ukraine and for the development of production in your countries as well. Europe, together with America, has better weapons than Russia. We also have stronger tactical solutions. Our operation Spiderweb yesterday proved that Russia must feel what its losses mean. That is what will push it toward diplomacy. And when Russia takes losses in this war, it's obvious to everyone that Ukraine is the one holding the line, not just for itself, but for all of Europe. Ask your intelligence, what is Russia planning this summer in Belarus? If they are bold enough to prepare attacks from there, then we need more strength together.
Nobody can deny that the desperation on the part of Zelensky and his administration is just going through the roof. And the question would be, who's going to manage that?
Yeah, well, you get it. Terrorism is always the act of desperation. Now, I do draw a difference between launching drones on a military target, which is, you know, I think that's what I'd call a legitimate act. Not that I endorse it, but it's not targeting civilians. The blowing of the two bridges, and particularly blowing the one bridge so it would collapse on an oncoming train, that is an act of pure terrorism, a violation of every standard of international law. But these kinds of these are acts of desperation. You know, you're not old enough. Okay. Hell, I'm not old enough to remember towards the in the last 6 months of World War II, the Germans were launching rockets into London. Now these were these were sort of predecessors of today's, you know, cruise missiles and such. Game changer. Well, it didn't change the outcome of the war at all. All it did was kill some civilians, which was, just added up to the charges brought against Nazi Germany at the Nuremberg trial. So I would say this is very similar to that. It's dramatic. It acquires news coverage, but it doesn't change the military situation one bit.
Larry, do you consider these attacks, not on the military part, on the civilians, on the bridges, do you think that the mastermind of these attacks, still do you consider them as the United Kingdom, or you've mentioned you don't know if the United States CIA was involved in that, but I really feel that the United Kingdom is the mastermind in all of these desperation acts on the part of Zelensky and his administration, because they want to show they can do something. They can do huge damage on Russians. That's to get more weapons. As Zelensky in this video, by the way, he was mentioning, we need more weapons. We need to defend ourselves. All of that. They're asking for more weapons.
Yeah. So if you ask me, was Donald Trump briefed on this and did he approve it? And approve it as a covert operation and sign off on it? I don't believe that. Is the CIA, though, operating on authority with respect to carrying out a mission in Ukraine, that it's still under that authority, it can still collaborate, conspire, plan, and provide support to Ukrainian intelligence service? Yes, I think that that is happening. That's what happened here. And that the CIA is working closely with, coordinating with MI6. Because British and U.S. intelligence have worked closely throughout this entire project. At a minimum, there was a CIA officer on scene who absolutely knew what was going to happen. So yeah. they can't pretend that this was a complete surprise or shock.
Larry, isn't that amazing that Russia keep these bombers out of there was nothing above them, nothing. It was in an area that any drone attack can access that and can. Why was that the case in Russia? Why they're not protecting until they're putting them in some sort of building, something that to protect these bombers?
That's a great question, because under the START II treaty, one of the requirements is to keep the bomber forces out, exposed, so that they can be counted by satellite. So this was Russia abiding by the conditions of that treaty. They may now move to say, okay, you clearly are not honoring the treaty. You're not even controlling your vassal state. So maybe that was actually the reason behind this, to try to force the Russians into taking action to break the treaty, so that the United States could blame Russia. You know, there's a lot going on here, but I think now the Russians are definitely going to rethink this. Of course, they already did have, as apparently, air defense systems and anti-drone systems, at least two, if not more, of the airports. So, again, the amount of damage that could have been done was not. My understanding is at least two of the trucks that were supposed to launch drones blew up prematurely, or were detonated prematurely, because the drivers were like suspicious and started checking it out. And next thing you know, this was remotely detonated. Again, that means they're not operating on just local cell phone lines. Starlink clearly, I think, was involved in providing some coverage of this, or they would tap into the Russian communication system, but the ultimate monitoring of it back in Kiev or wherever was done all with the help of Western intelligence.
What Colonel Jacquebeau today suggested to us is that these containers were somehow self-destructive ones, that anybody try to access them to try to invade the containers, that could be the outcome, that could bring some sort of explosion to the container.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
Yeah, and how these people who were driving these trucks to get to the location that they wanted to get, these people were Russians?
They're probably Russians. You know, they were hired as contract truck drivers. So, hey, you've got this, you know, we need to hire your truck.
They didn't know what is in that.
Well, you would think that they would ask, but there's no guarantee that somebody would if they're being offered enough money to drive it, they'd say, hey, we just need you to drive this truck from here to here. Okay. Then you get paid X amount. They give you some money up front to make sure you do it.
Larry, Zelensky in this video, he said that I think everyone saw the operation yesterday. One of them, at least. That's why we need more support from our European and American partners. Strengthening Ukraine now means strengthening Europe's front line. Is there anybody in the Trump administration buying these sort of allegations on the part of Zelensky?
No, well, you know, Keith Kellogg. You know, yeah, I'm sure there are a few, but the question is Trump buying it? And I don't think so.
Here is what Keith Kellogg said, Larry.
Mr. Merz has said, well, I'm going to give the Ukrainians the Taurus missile system. Well, that's like a Tomahawk land attack missile in miniature form. It's got a significant warhead to it. It travels, you know, roughly 300 miles, which means you can penetrate deep into Russian space. Putin has made those comments. Well, if you're going to supply them with weapons, we continue to be part of the aggressor. And he considers this a proxy war by NATO as well right now. And frankly, in a way it is. I mean, you look at what the European nations have done with support. I mean, it's clearly Putin sees that.
Even Keith Kellogg says if you send Taurus missiles to Ukraine, that would be devastating.
Well, you know, I like to use the expression referring to Helen Keller, and people may or may not know who Helen Keller was, but she was a woman who became famous working for people with visual auditory disability. She was deaf. She couldn't hear. She was blind, and she couldn't speak. But she still managed to have an impact on the world. But nonetheless, being deaf, dumb, and blind means you can't really see or perceive what's going on around you. And what Kellogg said, I said that even Helen Keller would recognize. Yes, this is a proxy war. And it is it's dangerous. At some point, this proxy can turn into direct war. The United States, these policymakers, so many both in the intelligence community and in the Department of Defense, refuse to put themselves in the shoes of the Russians and think, you know, how do the Russians perceive this? Or ask themselves if Russia was doing to us what we were doing to them, would we be reacting the same? And, you know, I always think that's a great rule of thumb to follow in international relations. You know, we call it the golden rule. You do to other people what you want those people to do to you. And conversely, when you do to other people, if you start doing to other people's violence and mayhem, then don't be surprised when the same is visited upon you.
We know that on the battlefield, Russians are advancing in the Sumy region on the front line. But do you feel that Zelensky and the administration in Ukraine would consider any sort of a strategic gain for what has happened yesterday?
What do you mean by that?
Strategic gain, because it seems that the only strategy on their part right now is getting more funds and weapons from the West to keep going and keep continuing the conflict in Ukraine. If that's a strategic goal for them,
this is a failed strategy. If you want to make the case that, the tactics launching these drone strikes on the strategic bombers of Russia was to accomplish several things. One, to destroy or seriously, significantly damage Russia's ability to do air-launched cruise missiles and bombs. And in doing so, that we demonstrate to the West, one, Russia's weakness, two, our capability, and then, as you note, that provides, persuades the West to say, oh my God, Ukraine has a chance. Yeah, let's get in there and support them. It's a failed strategy. I wrote a piece, Thursday, with respect to the issue of casualties that are supposedly being inflicted on Russia. And I went and looked at the number of artillery rounds being fired by the Russians compared to the number of artillery rounds being fired by the Ukrainians starting in 2022. In 2022, the ratio was like 7-8 to 1. For every one shell that Ukraine would fire, Russia's firing 7 to 8. In 2023, that ratio went 23 to 1. Now it's down to like 20, between 15 and 20 to 1. Well, what that means with respect to casualties is that if you assume that both sides have the same capability in launching artillery strikes and hitting a target, and that a number of those rounds are going to inflict casualties, just by definition, by the sheer numbers alone, Ukraine is going to suffer the disproportionate number of casualties. And when you look at it from a strategic standpoint, here's Ukraine with a population now estimated to be about 28 million up against Russia, which is 140 million. So even if Russia and Ukraine are losing forces at the same rate, Ukraine's going to run out well before Russia. Just a simple math problem. So this is the broader strategic outlook for Ukraine. It's not only bleak, it's certain death. Ukraine is the defeat of Ukraine is assured. It's just a matter of time. And Russia has some control over that time by how quickly it wants to mass force and how much firepower it wants to pour in on Ukraine. It has, you know, it's been conducting a special military operation, which means it's not mobilizing all of its forces. It's not destroying all the communication centers in Ukraine. It's not destroying all the power stations. It's not destroying all the fuel depots. It's limited itself. In other words, to try to, if you will, minimize impact on civilians. But they could reach a point where they say, okay, this is now total war and the civilians are going to suffer.
I don't know if you saw Lindsey Graham talking about that Ukraine will win, we're going to support them. And do you feel that Lindsey Graham has something to do with what has happened in Russia? Did he know about it? Maybe
Was he told about it, briefed on it? I think almost certainly. And, you know, that's why he's so giddy. But, Graham, I've been told that Senator Graham faces some real legal risks now. That reportedly he's been receiving a lot of money that's been laundered through Latvia, coming out of money that the United States sent to Ukraine. Ukrainians stole it, shipped it to Latvia, and some of it's made its way into Senator Graham's pockets. We'll see if that pans out, if that's true.
I always wonder, who's the worst enemy of Lindsey Graham? Is it Russians or Ukrainians? Because it seems to me, after all, the hatred, if the hatred is toward Russians, is killing all of Ukrainians. And he doesn't care about it.
I think his biggest enemy is himself. He's his own worst enemy. He opens his mouth, he gets into trouble. You got to go back and question, what is his obsession with Ukraine? And I think when the evidence is revealed about his financial, the way he's benefited financially from this, it'll help explain a lot.
Do you feel that anything would come out of the negotiations between Russians and Ukrainians? Every time they're talking about the exchange of prisoners, nothing more than that. And maybe Zelensky is buying time. He's talking about ceasefire. He's so serious about achieving some sort of ceasefire, which we know wouldn't be the case on the part of Russians. And do you see anything beyond that?
Well, at this latest meeting, Ukraine called for an unconditional ceasefire. Russia said, "Niet, no." And it said, "Well, we want to have a meeting between Putin and Zelensky." And the Russians said, "Niet, no. We'll talk about exchanging bodies." Well, you know, they've already been doing bodies exchanges. You know, the last three have been at a rate of like for every one Russian soldier's body returned, there are 26 dead Ukrainians. This is Russia's not going to be the one to say, "Okay, we're no longer going to talk to you." They'll continue to talk, but they're not going to move in their position. And you know, the Ukrainians can continue to insist on impossible points, such as, "Oh, we've got to have an unconditional ceasefire." There will not be an unconditional ceasefire at all. Never. The military campaign is going to continue. It's going to increase in intensity. And I fully expect now, since the talks are over, sometime in the next 24 to 36 hours, you're going to see some massive, massive missile strikes, possibly the use of the Oreshnik on Ukraine.
Larry, the situation right now with the negotiations between Russia and Ukraine is not the way it was in 2022. Look at Zelensky and his administration. They don't have any sort of future without the war in Ukraine. And on the other hand, Europeans are totally involved in the war in Ukraine. The intelligence, everything is involved in Ukraine, which wasn't the case in 2022 that much.
And well, they were not overtly involved, but they were absolutely involved.
Yeah. So, with all that said, is Donald Trump somehow, does he have any sort of hope for these negotiations? I don't see anything coming out of this. Because if Donald Trump is serious about putting an end to the conflict, Donald Trump can put an end himself without any sort of help coming from Europe and Ukraine.
Right, right. No, you're correct. The United States continues to be an enabler. We go day to day from what looks like hopeful signs to what looks like no signs. Trump's comments over the past week, especially with respect to Russia's retaliation against Ukraine for the missiles, for the drone strikes that occurred prior to May 24th. Indicate that Trump is he's either lying or he's being deliberately misinformed by his staff. And frankly, I don't know which it is. I suspect it's deliberate misinformation, but, could be wrong.
For what purpose?
Because the staff wants to continue the painting Ukraine as the victim, Russia as the aggressor, and hopefully you lay the, and finally convince Trump to refund, send more money to Ukraine, send more weapons to Ukraine. Based upon the events of this last weekend, since last Friday, with the attacks on the bridges, I guess, in Bryansk and Kursk, and then the attacks on the airfields yesterday, Russia's bill of particulars against Ukraine is increasing in size and length.
Here is, Larry, what Stormer said about their strategy.
And today, following through on this review, I want to set out three fundamental changes that we're going to deliver. First, we are moving to warfighting readiness as the central purpose of our armed forces. When we are being directly threatened by states with advanced military forces, the most effective way to deter them is to be ready. And frankly, to show them that we're ready, to deliver peace through strength. Now, Britain has the finest.
These people already are getting ready to start a new world war, in my opinion. Nothing. But how can these sort of talks not be a concern for Trump and his administration?
Are you familiar with Monty Python?
So,
a British comedy group, and they did a brilliant movie on, you know, based around the quest for the Holy Grail, King Arthur, and, you know, the Knights of the Round Table. And in the movie, there was this black knight who encountered one of King Arthur's guys. And in the course of their fight, they cut off both arms, cut off both legs. And so this black knight's laying on the ground with no ability whatsoever to use arms or legs, to throw anything, to use any kind of weapon. All it had was its mouth talking. That's Britain today, okay? Britain is that legless, armless, loudmouth. They can talk all they want, they can't do a damn thing. Britain is in denial. They still fancy themselves as the rulers of the world. And hell, they can't even rule their own country. So, you know, and here's Starmer. He's so politically damaged. You know, this whole affair over the arson incidents of these Ukrainian male models. Gee, how did Starmer know them? You know, was he rubbing baby oil on their backs? You know, that's at least one of the suspicions. And these are jilted lovers who, you know, set fire to his house. Because I guess he may have cut off contact or wasn't sending the money or, you know, but, you know, three male Ukrainian models just don't this up and decide one day, hey, let's go set fire to this guy Starmer's house just to create an incident. So the Brits with this kind of talk, oh, we're going to prepare military, you know, our military. They have no military to speak of. Excuse me.
How about the case of Merz? He's preparing to continue supporting Ukraine even without the United States.
Again, delusional. German industry is collapsing. It's not expanding. They're closing factories. They're not opening new factories. They're not increasing the workforce. So, you know, again, why is Merz saying what he's saying? Well, you know, we talked about this last week. It's the money. He's a BlackRock stooge. And BlackRock's got a lot of financial assets at risk in Ukraine and is trying to figure out how to salvage that. But they do not have the military or economic means to do so.
Did you see the article in Politico that Macron is threatening China with the case of North Korean soldiers in Ukraine? They said, you withdraw these soldiers or you're going to be at war with NATO.
These guys are, Macron's threatening China, and yet his wife is slapping him around like the bitch he is. You know, this is not a guy loaded with testosterone that could get into a fight. you know, his wife manhandles him.
Larry, right now, I think a lot of pressure would these sort of attacks. We don't know. I don't know how much you follow the internal media in Russia. I don't know how much pressure Vladimir Putin right now is receiving from the public opinion or somehow the elites in Russia in terms of the way that he's handling the situation in Ukraine. I would assume that he's going to receive a lot of pressure from the far right, those people who are more aggressive toward the conflict in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And if that could change the mindset of Vladimir Putin and his administration toward the conflict.
Well, this is, you know, this is sort of the foolish, contradictory nature of this strategy. I call it the Western strategy and embraced by Ukraine. They're trying to target it and personalize it in terms of Putin. As if, oh man, if they only get rid of Putin, things would be okay. And it's like, they're not reading the public correctly. Putin is seen by many in Russia as being too slow to anger, being too calm and methodical. But that's Putin's nature. He's not easily rattled. Yeah. And if you go back, you know, we mentioned this, last Friday, you go back and watch Oliver Stone's 4-part series, his interviews with Vladimir Putin that covered, you know, really a 2-year period. You really see that Putin's, he's a very cerebral guy. If Putin was killed or removed, the odds that you would get somebody like a Medvedev in a position of leadership, holy smokes. Medvedev, he'll pull the trigger a lot quicker than Putin. And if nothing else, what this is revealing is not so much frustration with Putin, but growing unity among the Russians about finishing Ukraine off and then making sure that it could never again pose a threat to Russia.
Larry, right now on the battlefield with the situation that they're experiencing, Ukrainians are experiencing, do you think that somehow would force Europeans to maybe change their policy in Ukraine, maybe sending more mercenaries to Ukraine? Because we know that the situation on the Ukrainian or on the part of the Ukrainian army is not that good.
Well, actually, it looks like the word is getting out, at least within the merc community, because there have been some foreign fighters that are now withdrawing, leaving Ukraine. Because, you know, they recognize this thing's coming to an end. Ukraine does not have the manpower or the leadership. I think the time may have come for Russia to consider trying to decapitate the Ukrainian military, literally cut off its head, destroy Sirsky, kill the upper leadership, and then pick apart what's left of the Ukrainian military.
I don't know what's in the mind of the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself in negotiations. Do you think that in his mind and in the people who have offered these sort of talks between the two parties, do they really believe that would help their position? The Trump's position, I'm not talking about the people who are willing to continue the conflict, or they would feel in the near future that these sort of talks are going to go nowhere and the United States has to decide what would be the outcome on the part of the United States, because I don't see Donald Trump continuing this conflict. I don't see Donald Trump supporting this conflict. He can send a lot of weapons if Europeans decide to buy from the United States.
Depends on which Donald Trump you're talking to. I mean, he keep, you know, the guy is let's politely call it two-faced. You know, he says the exact opposite thing within a day or two of saying it. You know, on one hand, you know, this is they don't reach a deal now, we're walking away. Well, he hasn't walked away yet. You know, as we pointed out a week ago, his comments with respect to Russia's drone and missile attack in retaliation for the Ukrainian one, Trump only blamed the Russians, said nothing about the Ukrainians, and frankly has not said much at all publicly condemning the terrorist attacks that have taken place on the on those two bridges and the death of about 12 people. So, you know, Trump is, God, he's weak. He really is. He's weak. And, you know, he's, you know, he always, I say, winning, winning, winning. Well, he's not winning on any front. You know, he, whether you're talking with respect to Russia, whether you're talking with respect to the, in bringing an end to the genocide of the Palestinians, whether you're talking, getting a deal done with Iran, or the tariffs, Trump is losing.
We know that many people are criticizing and were criticizing Elon Musk for his sort of role in providing this the internet to Ukrainians. But after all, we know that he wasn't in favor of war for the foreign policy of the United States. He wasn't interested in war with China, I would argue with Iran, with Russia and Ukraine. He was somehow a man of peace. He wanted some sort of trade happening between the United States and these countries. This guy is not there anymore. He's not, he was removed from the scene, or he has decided to get out of the administration. If we consider Elon Musk as a movement within the administration for peace, is the administration losing its momentum to change the course, to change the foreign policy of the United States?
It's an act. It's a PR move. He's an enabler of war. His Starlink is providing critical infrastructure, communications infrastructure to the Ukrainians to be able to continue to operate in the field. Yeah, so, you know, Musk is good at pretending, oh, I'm a man of peace. It's, you know, like him saying, hey, I'm a family guy. Yeah. Sees how many different women he can sleep with and how many different kids he can create. He's like, you know, he's like an unofficial polygamist. You know, I don't ignore his prowess as a businessman, as a visionary with respect to a variety of technologies and space travel. But he's as much a facilitator of this war as anybody. And to pretend otherwise is just to ignore it. So, you know, he had to leave the Trump administration and his Doge capability because there was actual, I think the deadline was like 130 days in, and then there would have to be some kind of action. So he was up against that 130-day deadline and walked away. But, you know, he's making enormous amounts of money off of Starlink through DOD. And because of some Chinese compromises of other systems, the Department of Defense is turning increasingly to Starlink. It's going to make Musk more wealthy, not less. War is really good for him, really good.
Who's the face of peace in the Trump administration? Is it Steve Witkoff?
No one. No one. There's no face of peace. It's all it's all about trying to shine up Trump's image, whatever it takes. But there's nobody. The closest you've come maybe is J.D. Vance. But he's not calling the shots.
Somehow that much, he's not that much involved in the decisions that they're making. With the case of, with the signal gate, we've learned how he was somehow on the margin of decisions, the main decisions in the Trump administration.
Well, but he was a cautionary voice in that. Yeah. You know, he actually turned out to be on the right side of history in that case.
Do you feel that he's going to play the same role in Ukraine? He's going to do something, because Donald Trump is so unbelievable. He has changed his mind. Unbelievable the way that, as you mentioned, he's attacking Vladimir Putin and not saying anything to Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe Starmer, which I do believe that Starmer is so lot involved in the conflict in Ukraine.
Yeah, no, it is. There is no clear strategy on the part of Trump. And we got to take it, you know, step back and look at what's, you know, like, for example, what's going on with the negotiations with Iran. Yesterday and the day before, it sounded really hopeful that there was news being released that Trump had ordered the State Department to halt any efforts to impose additional sanctions on Russia, on Iran. And yet, today, the Iranian Foreign Ministry is reporting they received the proposal from the West, the written proposal for a final agreement, and the reaction was, you got to be kidding me. This is crap. So, you know, again, it's not Trump is, when he was a real estate developer, he played lots of games and he could get away with it in the real estate world. And, you know, he could threaten to not make payments and to walk away and bankrupt himself, because he owed banks so much money that they had to accommodate him. He's got that same mentality with respect to international relations, except in this case, he doesn't hold the Trump cards. And that is that's a problem. You know, they did it as well to Hamas. I believe the reports that, you know, basically Witkoff had provided assurances to Hamas leadership and then completely reversed himself. So this is, Trump, whatever commitments he may have made to Vladimir Putin over the phone, it appears he's not necessarily following through with those in practice with respect to Ukraine.
They're trying to put pressure on, as Reuters reported, they're trying to put pressure on IAEA to say that Iran is not just doing the right way. And do you think that Reuters reported that France, Germany, and the United Kingdom are behind this sort of pressure? Mm-hmm. But how about Trump administration, their position?
This is, you know, that IAEA report that was put out, this is an intelligence op. This is designed to paint Iran as the aggressor and to justify attacking Iran. I think that's where this ultimately is headed.
Yeah. Somehow, the foreign policy so far, it's nothing better.
No, though, there's no, you know, again, remember Trump, God, now it's like 5 weeks ago. Those countries are lining up to kiss my ass. Really? How many have come in to kiss your ass, Donald? The United Kingdom. Now, that says something about the United Kingdom in terms of where its priority is, kissing ass. But Japan, India, China. And then the backdrop is you've got, at least 81 members of the Senate vowing to impose, quote, bone-crushing sanctions on India and China because of their dealings with Russia. You know, the world is getting tired of the United States being a bully. And at some point, it's gonna blow up in our face, and we're going to pay a very, very severe price for that.
Larry, the situation in Gaza, You see the picture, the starvation, people are just running around trying to find something, and Israelis are attacking them, killing them.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the world does not care. The Houthis care. The Houthis have been trying to do something. They're the only one. The only one. This is, you know, this is a real indictment of the Arab and Muslim countries in the region. Their inaction and their passivity. Yeah, you can do it to the people in Gaza at some point. The United States can do it to you too.
Saudi Arabia, together with other Arab states, again, they're trying to put pressure on Donald Trump in order to achieve a Palestinian state, to achieve some sort of recognition of a Palestinian state on the part of the Trump administration. I would assume that Israelis are doing the same in Washington. Who, if you were to compare these two forces that are putting pressure on Trump, who's gonna have, after all, the upper hand, or somehow more pressure on Trump, or getting some sort of outcome in their favor?
The Zionist. You know, Trump's going to always come down on the side of Israel. You know, he needs the Saudis. He needs the Gulf Arabs from a financial standpoint. You know, if he's strictly motivated by money. But, you know, there's something else going on here. So it is, you know, the interests of Israel are ultimately going to prevail over everything else.
Yeah.
Did I start your week off right? You said, boy, I feel better about things now.
Larry, we both were optimistic about Donald Trump before coming to power.
Yeah.
And he's destroying everything.
I'll say it, I was wrong. I thought Trump had really learned some lessons from the persecution and activities of the last 4 years. But instead of the art of the deal, man, he's not making any deals that ought to be made. And he's caught up with his own narcissism. Now, not to say he's, you know, Obama was narcissistic, Biden narcissistic, Bush, George W. Bush narcissistic, Bill Clinton. Oh, my God. You know, it's telling. It's an indictment of the American political system that we get such clowns in leadership position.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today.
Well, I thank you. We'll be talking to you later this week.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. See you soon. Stay well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.